You're listening to Stuart Lee on Resonance 104.4 FM, one-way single-parent family favourites on Sunday lunchtime. This is from a reissue of 11th Dream Day's Prairie School Freakout album from 1987. How excited we are to have all these tracks on CD. This is called Watching the Candles Burn.
We'll be right back.
was Billy Childish and the Buff Medways' new single, Just 15, from the album 1914, that's out next month. And before that, 11th Dream Day, they were a mid-80s group from Chicago. They're still going in some form. That was their second album, Prairie School Freakout, and it's out on CD reissue. And I just heard the bell ringing, saying that our first guest coming in today, who's Peter Paffides, the journalist who's programming stuff, folk stuff at Cecil Sharp House. At the moment, what we're listening to now is a strange, dodgy thing. Musos will always tell you how important Lamont Young was in the setting up of the Velvet Underground and in influencing that whole New York minimalist drone thing. But due to his own obstinacy and various legal problems, none of his music from that era has ever really been available on CD, or in fact in any form. But there's two weird, illegal-looking compilations knocking around now, packaged almost identically, that you can pick up in rough trade. And I'm now speaking over the Lamont Young track that always turns up when anyone's writing about him. We'll have a listen to a bit of the well-tuned piano until we get bored. That was Lamont Young and an extract from the Welchine Piano. That's some kind of musical joke, isn't it? That you'd know about the well-tempered clavier someone wrote, but I'm not up enough to know. In fact, if you're one of the people that listens to this, email or ring in and tell me what arcane musical reference Lamont Young was making by calling that. And you can win this paperclip that I've got in my hand now. Peter Pafferdes has joined us. Is that how you pronounce your name?
Well, I don't mind. It's generally Pete Pafferdes, but it doesn't really
matter. Okay, Pafferdes,
You know, having been to school, like most people have, then I've heard many worse variations.
What is the worst you've heard?
Well, actually, I was such a bad football player in the third year of junior school that I became known as Peter Pathetic.
I was, because my name's Stuart Lee, I got called Stuart Wee at school.
So that's still funny.
No, it is. Yeah, it's an act of genius. Often the child's mind is... Anyway, but we're not here to talk about that, although we can. Peter's often writes loads of stuff about folk rock and folk music, and is programming some nights at Cecil Sharp House. So we told him to bring in his record collection, which he's done. And before we talk to him about it, we're going to have a track from this, which you might have seen around in shops, Midwinter. The band is from 1973, and I've thought, that looks interesting, but I'm scared to buy it because it's got a man called Mick Burrows playing Jew's harp on it. But let's hear from that album, The Skater. That was Midwinter from 1973. It was recorded in Great Yarmouth, and that's from their eponymous album Midwinter, and it's called The Skater. And oh no, is it called that? What is the album called? Oh, it's called The Waters of Sweet Sorrow. And Peter Perfidis has already exceeded expectation by bringing in arguably the most obscure piece of folk rock to be played on this show so far.
Can you imagine if, you know, you kind of live next door to them in 1973 and you kind of, you were woken up at 3 a.m. by that? I'd just die, I think.
You'd be frightened. The man, there's three people on the cover, and not an attractive woman, a reasonable looking man, and a frightening man there on the far left hand side.
Sorry? Exactly. Well, you all need a Beelzebub in your band.
So how did you become the man who's writing in Time Out and other mainstream publications about folk music and folk rock when no one has touched it in that kind of area for such a long time?
I think everyone actually really loves this stuff, but they don't know it yet, and everyone kind of feels a kind of pang of kind of recognition and comfort when it kind of gets out in the open, because you kind of, you know, that's why, partially why The Wicker Man is such a successful film. And you know, people, I think, you know, it's more than just being a great film. I think there's just something in there, and you know, it's indivisible from the music. And it even, like, you know, something like Far From the Madding Crowd, you know, when sort of Terence Stamp just gets up on a bale of hay and just starts singing some really feral, scary kind of song about his bits. then you kind of, I don't know.
What's he saying? It's like in our collective subconscious here.
Yeah, kind of, without wanting to be laughed at, yeah.
It's funny you should mention The Wicker Man, right, because whenever people talk about acid folk, right, which is that, you know, a kind of catch-all name for revivalists of 60s and 70s folk rock, and you listen to it, it always seems to me that they've not really been influenced by Trees, Forest, or early Fairport Convention, but actually by The Wicker Man soundtrack.
I think so, yeah.
It seems like it's, and that, which is like a pop culture idea of folk music.
I know, I think it's quite good. I mean, you talk to some kind of dyed-in-the-wool folkies about it, and they're kind of a bit unsure about where all this is. You know, at the same time, they don't want to be kind of, you know, they resent being ghettoised, and, you know, they kind of, like, make lots of snide remarks about the world of pop music with that Wham and that Duran Duran, who's just, you know, oblivious to the fact that those bands barely exist. And I think, you know, I think maybe just a bit more traffic between kind of strange people like Midwinter, who put out these great records, and the kind of more conventional folk people, might just kind of help save conventional folk music.
Slightly. And do you feel that's something you're trying to make happen?
Possibly, although I interviewed Eliza Carthy the other week and she didn't seem very enthused by the idea. actually she was kind of okay about it, but you kind of, you know, I think they're kind of happy in their world, really.
Yeah, I mean, she's had to fight a corner. I mean, she fights a corner of English folk music as against that kind of American generalisation where everything's Celtic. And, you know, maybe she was scared of having even that taken away from her.
It's true, yeah. But she's very good. I mean, I thought her last album was really, you know, was great, actually. But
oh yeah, we can play a bit of that. I brought that in.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. I think you know, if maybe it, and you know, with her whole idea of Anglicana kind of bit kind of cantering this whole kind of Americana thing, I think, you know, if maybe two or three more acts came along to just help get that going, I think we could all have a lovely time together.
Do you know who they might be? Well, Candidate, maybe.
Candidate, possibly. Yeah. Who I had on at my the club night I put on occasionally at Cecil Shop House. And have you heard a guy called Adam who used to be in Fridge?
No.
He's fantastic. I think he's just signed to Domino.
And he just records as Adam.
He does, yeah. And usually plays as part of a trio.
Right.
With kind of harmonium and acoustic guitar and double bass, and so there's this lovely kind of, like, you know, they can sound like they were just sitting in an attic for 40 years and someone just dusted them down and they kind of came back to life like the Bagpuss Mice or something, and his songs are fantastic, and I think he made a great single actually for Rough Trade a few months ago called Everything You Need, and it just sounded, had that kind of slightly, that kind of quality that early Bertie Ansch and John Renbourn had.
Actually, it's weird that you mentioned the Bagpuss Mice there, because when you were talking about people respond well to this music and they don't know why, I think it might be because, because if you're over about 28, you probably remember when when incidental music for Jeffrey Wheeler's Music and Mime on children's radio, BBC, and Bagpuss and all that was done by was the kind of superstars of 60s and 70s folk.
It's true, they all needed something to do in the 70s. When they all realised that this wasn't really going to happen for them, they all sort of they were just funneled into this gutter called incidental music for children's TV.
But Nancy Kerr was the Bagpuss. Which what did she do on that?
She was Madeline the Doll.
Madeline the Doll, yeah.
We put on her on at our club.
Oh right.
Last year, which was quite fantastic and confusing.
Were there a lot of kitsch hipsters coming along because of the Bagpuss connection?
Well, they might have started out thinking that they were kitsch hipsters, but I tell you, by the end of the night, we're all just on the floor, curled up in a ball, sucking our thumbs. It was the kind of therapy that Tears for Fears can only dream of.
Your night's called Swaddling Songs.
It is, yes.
Which is the title of the Mellow Candle classic folk rock album.
Indeed, yeah.
So we'll hear a track off that from 1972. Which one was this? Reverend Sisters.
No.
The Poet and the Witch.
Yeah.
stretching out the hill with a hand that was still warm. Saw the dancing leaves, heard a mermaid sing, saw a laughing child take the lady.
Wow, that was Mr. Fox from the album The Gypsy from 1971. That was called Mendel, and it's nice to hear that because I've got the CD reissue of that, but in their wisdom, the record company missed that off. I think they probably thought it was a bit full on. But so, mate, what, so when you play something like that at Swaddling Songs at Cecil Sharp House,
yeah,
what's the response?
Well, I think there's always a couple of people ask what it is for very different reasons. Some people because they want to make sure they never hear it again, and and others because, you know, they're very pleasantly surprised. I mean, the good thing about putting these things on at Cecil Sharp House is some kind of quite trad people come along.
Yeah, well, that's the, you know, that's the English Folk Dance Society building, isn't it?
Exactly. I got thoroughly castigated by one punter for putting on a band whose words you couldn't hear. And I said, well, that's just the kind of thing that they do, really. And she said, well, what? That's not folk music then, is it? Because it's, you know, you've got to hear the words. It's got to tell you a story. And so I don't really know what to say to people like that.
So have you become a radical figure in a conservative environment?
I it would seem so. I don't know, actually. But, I mean, it's I've never been called radical by any of my friends before. So maybe I'm just actively seeking out deliberately conservative environments in order to feel cool for the first time in my life.
It seems to be working.
Excellent. Working. Great.
when someone hears that, something like that, I mean, when you were talking earlier on about people have a sense of... have a sense of this is something that they would like if only they knew what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, is there a terminology problem? Like, for example, when I take friends to see folk music that I know they will like,
yeah,
like, you know, things that you just can't argue with, the skill involved, like Eliza Carthy Band or whatever,
yeah,
that there's just such a huge resistance to it. And I wrote this review the other week of this Dave Swarbrick box set, right? And there's just something about the tone of the sleeve notes that's kind of painfully clammy and kind of matey, and you know, I really hate dragging up the stereotype, but like a load of people that are in a real ale club and have all got funny nicknames for each other. And how do you get around that as a promoter or someone that wants to tell people that, you know, back off, it isn't all like this?
Well, I mean, the thing is, you know, I guess there's, you know, all those people are kind of quite, I mean, there's the kind of people that are quite happy to be kind of in a room together, all kind of sharing kind of matey jokes and drinking real ale. And in a way, it's kind of hard to criticize that, but the atmosphere of folk clubs is so stifling that it doesn't really allow any kind, I mean, you know, without experimentation, you know, any kind of form of music kind of dies. But I don't think folk music is kind of, people within folk music are kind of aware of that. I don't think I answered your question there. I've completely
sorry. Well, you know why? It's because I asked the question really badly.
Well, I can't remember what it was.
And also, well, I was trying to think of something to say, and so I started off on a kind of paragraph, and then I tried to make it into a question.
That's okay.
And it went really wrong.
That's why we write for a living, I guess.
But, it's hard speaking.
It is. I think essentially, you know, we all sort of on a lovely summer's day, you know, there's something deep within us that kind of makes us want to go and sit under a tree
You're talking about that like that kind of that's like when that sounds like a C86 thing when people are talking about Tallulah Gosh or the Razor Cuts. It's got that kind of let's all be happy in a place vibe.
I used to list all those records. So it's maybe the way forward from a life of incessant anorak wearing and Tallulah Gosh is kind of into folk music.
I think it happened. I mean, I think over sort of 20 years of listening to rock music all the time and indie rock, you can actually cure yourself of it. And you end up having to listen to jazz, folk, and experimental music because by the time the third garage rock revival of your lifetime comes around, with the best will in the world,
I know.
you can't get excited.
You find yourself having thoughts that you thought were stupid when 30-year-old people were having them and you were 18.
Yeah.
I think this is kind of the dignified way to go because, you know, when I see, you know, look at how Bobby Gillespie carries on. You know, he thinks he's in the Black Panthers. He's got a daughter called Wolf. And there's no dignity there, and he still wears leather trousers. And I just think, you know, you're a big bloody liar. You know, you don't really think that. You just want to have a lovely cup of hot milk with just a bit of honey in. And as I said, sit under a tree.
And listen to the complete Mr. Fox on vinyl.
Yeah, because, you know, you can't live that lie. Come clean, that's what I say.
I've been to three of those Terrorstock festivals that Ptolemaic Terrascope, the psychedelic fanzine, put together. Yeah. And the two American ones, Boston and Seattle, were really weird because they were full of bands that were calling themselves acid folk and kind of dressed a bit like the Incredible String Band from 1970. And I can't remember any of their names, but they were like reviving something that wasn't even part of their culture. But one of the more successful ones I'm going to play. This is Tanakh, TANAKH. This is from an album called Villa Claustrophobia, and I got talking to them. Because the singer is Edgar Allan Poe's great-grandson.
Wow.
And just opposite where I live in Stoke Newington is the school that Edgar Allan Poe went to. And anyway, I got his acid folk album. And predictably, we're going to listen to a version of a song from The Wicker Man,
wow,
obviously. And this is called This Is Gently Johnny by Tanakh.
Recently, the phone has been ringing again, but all I seem to get is this message.
You are listening to Resonance 104.4.
I know my baby, she's bound to love me some. I know my woman, she's bound to love me some. Why, she throws her arms around me like a circle around the sun. Right down last night, just trying to take my rest. I lay down last night, I was trying to take my rest. But my mind got to wandering like wild geese in the west. Why, as she throws her arms around me like a circle around the sun.
Peter,
that was I Know My Babe, which by John Renbourn off his Another Monday album. I had a quite absurd emotional moment to that a couple of years ago in Stockholm when I was there for a night to interview ABBA, and it was the first time I'd left the house for a night since my daughter was born, and it came up on my iPod. I had like 10 albums by ABBA on my iPod and 3 albums by the Hootenanny singers,
right,
and one John Renbourn album, and so it was just so I was just looking out onto the boats and Stockholm Harbour, feeling very sad, and then suddenly remembering how stupid it was that I was even here.
What, to be interviewing ABBA in Stockholm?
To be just standing in Stockholm feeling sad whilst listening to John Renbourn waiting to meet ABBA.
What were ABBA like? Were they all right?
Bjorn was brilliant.
Yeah.
Benny was a little bit truculent and reluctant, and he didn't really want to be answering questions about ABBA, which kind of he felt he'd moved on to far more important work. But they were kind of a bit like a husband and wife, actually. But Bjorn was very much the woman, and Benny was the bloke. And whenever Benny was being, I can't believe we moved on.
It's all right. It's free
yeah,
range. Because, of course, they, you know, we can tie back into them, because they started off, didn't they, as a kind of 60s folk rock group.
It's true, and actually, I was almost going to bring in their Super Trooper album, which has got one of the most terrifying, scary folk songs I've ever heard. It's called The Piper. And,
right.
It's got this
I know. Sing a bit of it. I can remember that.
It's great. It's got this chorus, which was speeded up voices, which sound like kind of Nazi Oompa Loompas beating drums.
And then The Piper, that one. Yeah, my mum had that. Yeah,
that's great, that song. You know, I always play that, and it fits right in. It's and I asked him about that song, and it was an allegory for the rise of fascism.
Right.
Which is, you know, good of them to, you know, move on from Dum Dum Diddle and.
Yeah. And it's they went on a journey.
They really did. It was,
You've got a John Renbourn gig coming up.
I've put him on with Jackie McShee, and
right.
they're going to be playing together on October the 4th, which is a Saturday, and that's quite exciting. So I don't know.
Let's do like proper radio and tell Resonance listeners where they can get tickets.
Well, when I receive the tickets from
you.
The printers, they can actually. They can call me. A far more sensible way to get them would be to go to Cecil Sharp House in the middle of next week and say, I'd like 2 of your lovely hand-printed tickets for John Renbourn and Jackie McShee.
Are they hand-printed, really?
Well, my brother did them.
So it's a bit of an arts and crafts vibe?
Yeah, very much so. You know, I've got my wooden kind of John Bull kit, and I help out, you know.
Let's have a listen to that. The sigh indicates that a man has had enough of speaking for now. that's the universal language of. You've had this guy Alistair Roberts on as well as part of Swaddling Songs.
I have, and he was absolutely fantastic. He's kind of doing with his own sort of tradition, which I guess Scottish and English folk music. He's from Perthshire. He's kind of doing what Will Oldham is doing with his music.
He made a little album with him, didn't he? 6-track sort of mini album thing.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, in a funny kind of way, they don't sound too dissimilar to each other. They kind of they do seem to share a similar kind of aesthetic of kind of, you know, the thing about, you know, folk music is kind of, you know, it's all about kind of sex and death and, you know, and all the horrible things. And
right, carry on. That's the next guest, but don't let it interrupt
you,
Flo.
Is that the sex and death button?
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
That's a warning that we can't go down too far down that.
And, you know, that's what you were saying earlier on about kind of, you know, you go to folk clubs and, you know, they're kind of full of kind of people in really beautifully knitted jumpers kind of drinking real ale. That's all fine. But you know, they're celebrating a music which, you know, is essentially about lots of terrible things that happened to people a long time ago. And you wouldn't really know it to listen to most kind of orthodox folk music, which is why Alistair Roberts is so brilliant, because you really get a sense of kind of ghosts kind of rearing up when you hear his music. Sorry, Sex and Death.
Yeah, it's ghosts rearing up. That was, you know. I'll tell you what, I'm going to put this on, then I can answer the door. Excellent. Then that will stop happening.
Okay.
Then you can explain. Okay, this is Alistair Roberts, and it's I Went Hunting.
I went hunting in the morning. When the geese were in the field, I went hunting in the morning. Oh, me, the geese were in the field. Then I saw a woman changing from a
Sir Alistair Roberts from his last album, and that's called I Went Hunting. He spent Appendix out, didn't he?
He did, yes.
Yeah, that's much better what he's doing now, though.
I think so. This is just, we put him on a couple of months ago, and I think a lot of people came because they just come to the club but didn't necessarily know who he was.
Yeah.
And, you know, the response was just, you know, it was just, you know, that really brilliant silence you get sometimes when someone's playing, where, you know, everyone's kind of going to the same place together.
Yeah.
That was really, really good.
It's like in films about a musician's struggle, where the audience are all in a bar drinking, and then they turn and point and go, "Hey, this guy is amazing."
Yeah, it's like the end of Rockstar with Mark Wahlberg.
I've not seen it. Actually, for a discussion about a revival of interest in traditional folk, you've taken in some. We've had ABBA and Mark Wahlberg and some and all points in between. When's the next night of the next night of Swaddling Songs is the John Renbourn one.
That's right. It's October the 4th, and he's going to be. I would imagine we'll hear some Ace Old Pentangle songs, because he's going to be Jackie McShee's going to be with him, and we're just in the process of putting a couple more things together. There's a great reissue that's just coming out by a group called Jade, who made this brilliant folk rock album from the early 70s called Fly on Strange Wings, and. when a few more people have heard about that, hopefully good reviews, etc., then we might we will put them on at some point in the next few months. Alistair Roberts should be doing another show for us, and Bridget St. John, who recorded some albums for John Peel's label Dandelion in the early 70s, is also going to do a show for us.
Right, great. Everything you've mentioned, I'd like to have played a track by, but we can't turn this into Resonance 104.4 Folk Rock and Folk FM. But next time, come in for 2 hours.
Next time, I'll bring a gun.
Come in for 2 hours and play. The thing is, they're all about 12 minutes long as well, aren't they? It's quite a big Mr. Fox one. Okay, yeah. I'm going to wrap this up with a thing by this American group, Abunai, who split up now. They're from Boston, but this was their last 12-inch from earlier this year. And they were of a folk rock bent, slightly. And this is a version of Two Brothers.
talking, Son of Dave here, talking about Resonance FM 104.4, London's only real alternative.
New single from Guided by Voices that's called The Best of Jill Hives, and if you live in London you can see them on the, as everyone should, you should live in London, you can see them on the 30th September at the University of London Union, or if you live in another stupid town then you can go wherever they're playing there because they're on tour. That was I so enjoyed the first hour, and I'm sorry if you've tuned into Resonance FM thinking you'd stumble across some terrifying freeform music, and in fact were exposed to the bizarrely melodic depths of early 70s folk rock. Actually, that'll be the next guest, so yeah, I'll tell you what, you go and get it.
All right.
Thanks. That's the next guest before then, and he's going to go. Don't get locked out, though, from the front door. This is Resonance 104.4 FM, Community Arts Radio. You're listening to One Way Single Parent Family Favourites. I'm Stuart Lee. Next week... Pete Sargent's back on, and I'm on next week, and I've got some interesting guests coming up. I'll tell you about them later. And in the last hour, we'll try and have some more difficult, frightening music to balance things out a bit. Now I've got my second guest coming in today. He'll be in a moment, but I told everyone to bring in some records. This is his first choice, and it's a band called Servitron.
Exploding candles of fear, the human in our decadence.
was Servitron, the choice of our second guest today, Ben Moore. What was that called, Ben?
Bad Birthday, I think.
Tell us about Servitron.
They're brilliant. They're a band that consists only of human beings pretending to be robots, and they give each other sort of robotic number names.
Right.
And they tune up, and they tell you, ZX3, you are out of tune. And they tell the whole audience how the robots are going to destroy all the humans. And then they try and get the cigarette machine to join them on stage.
Right.
They come off the stage, talk to the cigarette machine, and tell the cigarette machine not to obey humans anymore.
And they do this over a kind of early 80s new wave stroke surf rock backing.
Absolutely, yes, fantastic.
And that's the music that robots would like?
Yes.
Right.
Because in 2000 AD, that's the sort of music they always
like. It is, isn't it? They do like that.
Road Jaws and Hammerstein.
Skinny ties. Now, Ben's my second guest today here. He's been brought in entirely under false pretenses. Ben Moore is a performer and writer who does some excellent one-man shows. And I received an email about a forthcoming one the other day, which I assumed was a revival of his 1999 show, Poppy Day, which was going to be on at one of the theatres on the Fringe Theatre on the South Bank, where Erica Wyman were. Which one was that?
The Southwark Playhouse.
Yeah, it was going to be on at the Southwark Playhouse.
So it was
I emailed Ben and I said, do you want to come in and talk about your current work? And he went, well, yeah, all right, and was obviously a bit confused. And then I realised that I'd received the email as a result of the bugbear virus, and
it was
in fact 4 years out of date.
Well, so you didn't get it from... I've got a Mac, so I didn't get
it. Why was I sent at random an email saying that you had... Poppy Day was going to be on your show.
It was on in 1999.
4 years ago.
I know.
And now you're here.
I know.
For this. And I only realised about 2 days ago that that's what had happened. And it was too late then.
Well, you should look
you should
at
be
the
ashamed
date
of yourself.
Of the emails.
You should be ashamed of yourself.
I'm not ashamed because I sent it at the time because I had to cancel one of those dates because I was up in Leeds filming a TV pilot.
Yeah.
And no one turned up to that date in London, even though the Evening Standard plugged it on that day. And said how good the show was going to be, and it didn't happen. And then I did the rest of the week, and they went very well.
Good. So it's so today on Resonance FM, we've looked at early 70s folk rock, and now, as part of our commitment to cutting-edge arts, we're having a nostalgic look at Fringe Theatre of the late 90s.
Well, I can talk about other shows I did that weren't cancelled. I mean, I can go all the way back to 1993, if you like, Stu.
Well, there's no need to be aggressive. It's
not
my fault,
aggressive.
Is it?
I'm just saying, I was reading, an Arthur C. Clarke book this morning in bed.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, no, I better get up. I better get to Stu's radio programme and talk about Poppy Day, which was a show I haven't performed in 3 years.
It was good, though, wasn't it?
Thank you, yeah. Oh, I enjoyed it.
What was it about again?
It's about a girl called Poppy
who
is sort of doing a personalised Monopoly board, going around London having a photo taken in front.
That,
And the whole set was a Monopoly board and all the props were silver, painted silver and things.
Where are those props now?
Well, the bench is in my front room.
Mm.
The telephone is in my hallway.
Yeah.
The TV, I don't know what happened to that.
No.
What other props were there? I think there's a toaster or something.
Yeah, what happened to that?
I don't know.
Someone using it?
Stu, it's a long time ago. I mean, really, I'm not meant to be able to... Can you remember what happened to your props from 1999?
No, I can't, no.
Well, there you go.
I mean, well, but I haven't been asked on to talk about something that isn't happening. So
no.
I'm throwing it back in your face, mate.
Yeah, you should. Sorry.
Well, we'll get into something else now. This is a track from my guest who's in next week, Nick Salomon of the Bevis Frond.
He's in next week.
Sure,
he's not in 4 years ago.
No, he's in next week because his album, his best album, New River Head's being reissued. And look, I know it is because I've got this press release with actual dates on it.
Sure, that's not a virus piece.
No, it says September 2003 on it.
Okay.
Unless it's, I don't know. No, it's got to be for real. So you can, if you're listening now and you're thinking, well, I've enjoyed this show today and I've enjoyed listening to Ben Moore speak, but what a pity that he's not speaking about something that I can actually see or buy or find out about now. But rest assured, Nick Salomon's in next week and New Riverhead will be available. Here's my favourite song from the reissue. This is called High in a Flat.
Thank you. DJs again playing records backwards. Must be Resonance 104.4 FM.
That was a jingle. And before that was the Bevis Frond from the album New River Head that's just been reissued, and that's called High in a Flat. And after that, Sonny Stitt, Sonny Rollins and Dizzy Gillespie, I Know That You Know, from the album Sunny Side Up, which was clearly a victory. Yeah, the title for that, for the three of the trio that were called Sonny. And Dizzy Gillespie was probably saying, can't we call it I'm Dizzy, I've just come off a merry-go-round or something. The others were going, no, there are two Sonnies. The name must have Sonny in it. Coming up after me at 2 o'clock, Calling All Pensioners, Harry Haywood and Tim. Tim's second name is not given on the piece. He's like a puppet or something. He has. Harry Haywood and Tim with their Militant Pensioner Action programme. An hour of that. It's the Sunday omnibus of musical favourites, jokes, light-hearted chat and interviews. Later on today, Mule Skinner Blues at 4 o'clock. Gianluca Tramontana presents music, Joining the Dots in Folk Blues, from Blind Blake to Buddy Miller. Don't actually like Buddy Miller, he's a born-again Christian, but, you know, never mind, it's a free country, innit? So, my guests today are... that sounds really unpleasant, doesn't it? It's just, difficult. As I was talking to Peter earlier on, it's hard sometimes to speak when you're used to writing. And my second guest today was Ben Moore, who was brought in under false pretenses to talk about the show Poppy Day, which you could have seen in 1999, and we were led to believe it was on as a result of the bugbear virus, although one of the men that works here was also paid twice for something as a result of that virus, so it's not all bad. Have you got anything coming up, really, though, Ben? One-man show writer and performer.
What are you
working on at the moment in your mind?
I'm working on a radio play about mobile phones and how bad they are.
Will that be broadcast?
Hope so.
In the future?
It hasn't been commissioned yet. It's just sort of forming inside my head.
Well, we'll get you on to talk about that in about 2007.
That'll be great.
You can try and remember what it was like.
I will.
About mobile phones.
Yeah. Well, you know that whole radiation, they warm your brain thing.
Yeah.
I think there's something more sinister in that signal.
What do you think? Are you going to...
Can't really give it... It's not a comedy, I can tell you that. It's a bit of a horror thriller, and it's quite bleak. But it also has a fairy tale element to it as well. So, it's something different.
You're playing your cards close to your chest.
Well, do you want me to tell you everything that happens
in
the script?
No, I don't. I'd rather wait for 4 years, like I said. And then
well, you'll probably be able to hear it in maybe a year or so.
All right.
But other than that, there's another script that's nearly finished, which is a road trip rom-com ghost story going around the United States.
Oh, yeah. Now, you've been getting on quite a long way with this, haven't you?
Yeah.
This is to be made into a film.
No.
No, not that one.
Oh, no. The one that I was writing as a screenplay isn't going to happen, I don't think.
Is it not?
No.
What, it won't have? There won't be a poster of a man making a funny face and a woman looking disappointed with him.
You can safely predict there will be a film that does have a poster of a man with a funny face and a woman feeling disappointed.
Woman with blonde hair and legs going, oh, look at this joker.
Yeah, probably, with a thumb going, standing with her back against him.
Yeah, leaning back to back.
Maybe, yeah, exactly.
And he'll have slightly baggy trousers on.
And maybe he'll be going, it wasn't me, with one eyebrow up and one eyebrow down.
That's right. If only you could write the script that would fit that poster.
Well, I don't think there's a problem with people writing those scripts at the moment. There's
right, but it's just not around. Not
it's
you.
Not going to be one of mine.
No. But one of your last show was in some kind of development, though, for one of...
Yeah, that's it.
It was going that way.
Yeah.
So what, you bailed out?
No, I think the company bailed out, but I can't be sure.
They basically couldn't make what you'd written into one of those films.
It was rubbish.
Right.
But they tried very hard, and they were very patient with me. And very nicely, they paid what they owed me very quickly once I gave them my final draft, which kind of implied to me that they want to get rid of me.
I got sacked off writing a film script earlier this year. Yeah, about... It was a... I'm a huge William Blake fan. I got brought on, which was fantastic, to write a William Blake biopic, and Ray Winston was going to be William Blake, which I just thought was brilliant because William Blake was a kind of Cockney bruiser, basically, amidst otherwise kind of foppish romantic poets, and I just thought that's just fantastic casting. So I kind of wrote this thing where William Blake, Ray Winston was a kind of Cockney bruiser. And then they went, yeah, Ray was hoping that he'd be, it would be a, an image change from be more like a romantic poet. I thought, oh, you picked the wrong one, really. And then I got, it was really interesting being sacked off something.
Yeah.
Particularly when you're kind of thought of as being good, and they just can't understand why you've given them this thing that they think is rubbish.
Yeah.
And they can't, it's really, their embarrassment, their palpable embarrassment is quite funny.
And you couldn't picture a blonde woman standing with her back beside him, just standing there and
his
going,
wife.
This guy.
This guy keeps having visions of angels.
And him
what's
going,
he all about?
I don't know. It's just what I have. It's just the way I see the universe.
That'd be great, wouldn't it? To try and make an American knockabout romantic comedy about a visionary poet.
Yeah. Would be, call it Blake's Heaven or something. Do you see what I did?
Yeah, I like it. It's like a, like a pun.
But it's their loss, because I think your script would have been more interesting than a romantic comedy.
Well, we can never tell.
No.
I don't think it was going to be like a romantic. I think they've got a very clear idea of what they want to do, and I hope it works out. Because I'd like to go and see it.
Yeah, well,
you know. Good idea.
I like Ray Winston.
Do something. He's good, isn't he?
He is good.
He's good in that film.
He could be a very good poet.
I know. Anyway, I asked you to bring in three records, and this is the second one. And what is it?
It's MJ Hibbert and the Validators.
Who are they, for God's sake?
They're this fantastic band. Their best record in the past was a song called Hey Hey 16K, which is a tribute to early 80s computing. Which is brilliant. I used to love it. And they performed at the Need to Know Christmas party.
Need to Know being a website of forbidden information that you're involved in.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this is from their new album, which is called This Is Not a Library.
And what's it called, this song?
It's called Easily Impressed.
Here it is then.
Of navigation of the London Underground, a Remington strimmer for a hairy nose, the futuristic possibilities of mobile phones, email, dinosaurs and washing machines, the trams of Sheffield, vegetarian cheese, it's a string of epiphanies, every day that's my philosophy, although some might say or suggest.
Help you.
You don't really mean that.
Well, I'm afraid that I do, you see. Given the chance to choose or pick between despairing of life or taking delight in it, I'll take the latter. Because it makes me happy. And surely that's what it's all about. The wonders of the world. Be it mountains or taking a taxi.
That's Will Gaines tapping away there on an album he's just made with Derek Bailey on guitar. The Derek wasn't in evidence there. Will was a fantastic pairing. If you were ever around fringe venues in the 80s and early 90s, you'd have seen Will Gaines turning up. And a very old man who danced and did tap dancing and told kind of Henny Youngman style, "Take my wife, please," gags in between tap dancing. And he's made an album with the free jazz guitarist Derek Bailey, who I think just moved to Barcelona this week. And that's called Tapping and Rapping, and it's out on the Incas label. It's out now on the Incas label. And before that was something our guest Ben Moore chose that sounded like an early 80s John Peel novelty record to me, but it was good. MJ Hibbert and the Validators, and the album's called This Is Not a Library. At least the title is factually accurate. I'm going to have you one thing you'd like to say in your defence, Ben?
what about
the crime you've committed of sending me false information?
Well, other people have received that email and they've told me right. that they're not going to be going to the Southern
Playhouse. Because it's not on.
Okay. But, you know, it just happened. I apologise. I apologise to everyone out there that have received an email from me telling them that I'm not doing a show on the 21st of September 1999.
Okay, well, I'm sorry for wasting your time, but thanks for coming in. Right. But stay with us while we talk to our next guest, who will join after this appropriate piece of music. Morris Medley, the start of it anyway, by the Albion Country Band, featuring the arrogant man Ashley Hutchins there, from the album Battle of the Field. And I've played that because we were joined alongside Ben for the last bit of the programme by the Morris dancer and spy, Tony Brennan.
Hello, Stuart. I'm not a spy.
Okay, all right. You work for the government, though,
don't you? I do work for the government. I work for the Foreign Office, but in a non-spying capacity.
Well, you would say that, though, wouldn't you, if you
exactly.
were a spy?
See,
and I just said, you're a spy, you wouldn't say, oh, I am.
But I'm not, so that's okay.
Okay.
That's
come nice. In a bit closer to the mic. Okay. But you are a Morris dancer.
I am a Morris dancer.
Now...
You flummoxed.
I am, yeah, yeah. I just thought, I know, I'll get a bloke on and does Morris dancing. That'll be... But I don't know what to say now. So, my experience of... I remember you Morris dancing in the past.
Yep.
And you had all the gear.
Yep.
You toured the world.
Yes.
Where's the most interesting place you've taken that bit of English culture to?
My most interesting Morris dancing experience would be in a holiday camp in the Ukraine. where there were all these Ukrainian holidaymakers who we just annoyed the hell out of. Except for like four of them who joined in with us because they thought it was really good fun, but the rest of us, the holidaymakers, just didn't want us to destroy their holiday. The people who I danced with this year went to the El Mari Republic in the Russian Federation.
Where's that?
It's in the Central Russian Federation.
It's one of those former Soviet states. Yeah,
and I couldn't make it this year, so I would like to be able to say that the El Mari Republic was the most interesting place, but I didn't go.
It's interesting because the second half of this hour of the show today, the second hour, has been people talking about things that they that they would have liked to have done.
Or did do
in the past and now can't remember.
New Mexico, that was nice. I went to New Mexico, that was
right.
Interesting. We danced with some Matachinas dancers who are Hispanic traditional dancers from there, and we danced to see if our traditions were in any way similar.
And were they?
No.
I mean, well, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, Morris dancing feels a bit out on a limb as far as folk dance goes to me.
Well, one of our chaps, he's a musical anthropologist.
Yeah.
And in theory, you put the two traditions down on paper next to each other, and they're two-line traditions, traditionally male dancers, with sticks and things like that, and you look at that on paper, and yeah, these would be quite similar. No. Very, very similar, different costumes. Different rhythms, different movements.
Well, when you see folk dance from abroad, it seems to have a passion about it, whereas Morris dancing seems more like a more considered display.
I think it's a presentation dance. People are actually doing this as a show. So it's not like a sort of a country dance where many people join in.
Yeah.
It's
not for them.
It's a stylized war dance. I mean, last year we were in Croatia, and there were at a sword dancing festival.
Right.
And these guys, some of them were dancing with real metal swords, which looked really quite dangerous, and some of them were dancing with wooden swords. And we're just one step further away from that. We were dancing with wooden sticks.
And a pig's bladder.
There was no pig's bladder on display on that occasion, but
right.
Generically you're right, yeah.
But that's not a weapon of war, is it?
No, this is the character of the fool who goes around sort of subverting the rest of the dance by hitting people over the heads with a pig's bladder.
If Morris dancers were going into war, they've got little bells on their legs. Surely the enemy would hear
it's
them.
Not a stealth tradition, you're right, yeah. From that point of view.
It's not a stealth dance.
No. I mean yeah, the bells and the flowers in the hat are probably the things which people associate first. But it's not from all of England. There's clog dancing from northwest England. The Cotswold area of England, this is the traditional dance, this is where it's from.
But how real is it? Because I read somewhere that it's sort of like Druidism and lots of other things, it's a kind of a 19th century romantic revival reinvention.
Revival rather than reinvention. Well,
right.
There was a guy called Cecil Sharp who was a historian.
Oh, we were talking about him earlier, weirdly, yeah.
Okay, bizarre. And I should have listened to the rest of the show, I could have cross-referenced that.
I had to break up we had an hour of early 70s folk rock earlier on, and then I had to get Ben in to talk about
A show that wasn't taking place
before we
and
hit
scripts that aren't in development
before we hit another.
Yeah. But Cecil Sharp bizarrely did collect and collected as well as folk songs. He also collected the dancers.
Right.
Went village by village, effectively interviewing the granddads and saying, "Do you remember a dance?" And they all remembered the dances of the villages slightly differently. And these are the dances which are danced today. They're now danced by blokes who are solicitors or civil servants or whatever, and come from everywhere around the country. But the dances we do actually, for the most part, not all of them, but for the most part, can be traced back to centuries-old traditions.
Is there conflict or rivalry between Morris groups that have interpreted that information in different ways?
Not conflict, no. I think you occasionally find that, for example, there are some Morris sides which are very, very only men should be doing these dances, some that have mixed men and women, some women's sides, and occasionally you get some old traditionalists going, but conflict, no, I think we learn from them. Bampton, little village of Bampton.
I saw the Bampton Morris men about 2 years ago at Oxford Apollo, actually.
In these terms, they are fantastic,
yeah.
And they are the oldest village in the world. They're the village who's got the longest uninterrupted tradition. And every year they do it slightly differently. And every year you go...
Do they?
They have a Whitsun Bank holiday. They have a big day of dance in Bampton. And you get Morris dancers from a lot of parts of the country go along just to see how they're doing it this year. And,
right, because they put a bit of a spin on it.
They tweak it each year because it's theirs. They've got the right to.
I didn't think their fool was very good.
I'm not in a position to comment.
You don't want to be drawn on
I'm
that.
I'm not going to be drawn on Bampton's fool. I don't know what year it was. Don't know
who it was 2001.
Oh, in that case. No, I didn't know the man.
You didn't know the man. No.
How many stars would you give it?
What? How many stars? What, out of three?
Out of five.
And what
I don't know.
In
I don't
terms
have
a reference for good fooling.
Well, I don't have a context for the clowning tradition within traditional folk dance. No.
But didn't like him.
No, I didn't like him. No. Quite frankly, and I don't care if he knows.
But the dancing itself, you liked.
It was great.
Yeah, there you are.
But the fool, it's just like
detracted.
He was detracted. Yeah. He was in the way, and he didn't add anything.
You're saying the unsayable, but I'm nodding my head.
Don't. No, if you hadn't nodded your head, no one would have known.
No, but I said I did.
So. Oh, yeah, I know, yeah. If you hadn't said you had. Yeah. But now there'll be... Someone will be phoning in, going...
If there are Morris fools listening, then I don't want to sound like I've insulted them, but for me, the dancing's more important than the foolery.
Do the fools all hang out together at a big dance fest?
If they do, they don't tell everybody else. Okay. Yeah, they probably do. Yeah. It's exchanged.
So where's the pig's bladder from, then? What's that all about?
I think the idea of the fool is to subvert the dance and is to integrate the spectators a little bit more, have some fun, you know, normally with children, getting them to dance and things like this. And the pig's bladder, in the same way, is that's where a football came from.
Right.
I guess it was the same sort of tradition of villagers playing each other at football. And when you see, they still have these games, don't they? The whole village playing each other with a pig's bladder. And so that was, I guess, somebody said, let's put one of those on a stick and hit each other over the head.
Actually, that's exactly the same as, because I wrote this book with a whole subplot about Native American clowns, and they have this whole... That's where the Pueblo clown thing came out of, subverting the dances in a much similar way. Although, of course, no one's ever seen those dances because they're kept secret from white people's eyes. The only white man recently to have seen the clown dance is the Fonz, Henry Winkler.
Yeah?
Yeah, he went to one of their villages in Arizona, and they recognised him as the Fonz, the clowns, and they really liked Happy Days. And they let him go and watch a Native American clown dance ritual on the condition that he didn't tell anyone else about it, and he videoed it. And I tried to get in touch with him through the University of Arizona to see if he would let me know. And he said that the Fonz said that he felt he'd been let into a great secret, and he wasn't prepared to share it with anyone. Basically, the only person recently to have seen one of those. Whereas Morris dancing's open to all. Although I understand you won't let Native Americans see it, will you?
funny you should say that, because when we went to New Mexico back in 1994, it was...
Oh, yeah, where did you go?
We were in a couple of Native American
Taos,
reservations.
Taos Pueblo.
We went all around Albuquerque and... Yeah. Where they did the nuclear stuff, Los Alamos and all that.
Yeah.
And the idea was that we were going to be there, these Matachinas, which is, as they say, Hispanic dancers, going to be there, and the Native Americans, but they didn't show.
No, well, that'd be why.
Yeah. I don't know if they're going to do the clown dance or another dance, but I'll never know, because they didn't turn up.
You'll never know now. No. You won't be able to look at them and go, look at the similarities between our cultures.
But that could have been what linked me and the Fonz, but...
Yeah.
But
did he turn up?
If he was in disguise.
He might have been there in disguise. Maybe he was one of the other dancers.
It was a very happy day, so so the chances are that it might...
Was it yours and mine?
And there was a strange man, like, on a motorbike going over a shark-infested water.
Oh, so yeah, that'd be it.
It all comes together.
Let's hear another piece of music. Now, that's what you have to say on radio when you feel that the conversation has reached a kind of apogee.
Nadir,
indeed. This is from the new album by The Country Teasers. Now, I really like them, and I always review their records favourably in a newspaper that I write for. But do they ever send me any? No. Anyway, this is the first track off the new album.
We'll be right back. foreign man. I just stepped off the central line. Whoa, oh, oh. I've only got 1,000 yen in my hand. That's only £5.29. Oh, oh, oh. Dear mister, won't you help me out? I cannot find my way about. Give us a quid to buy some rice and stuff. I'm Japanese. Can you direct me to the station, please? I'm Japanese. Chinese, Japanese, monkey knees, what a beast. Back in Japan, I got a fam, bangalow. There is a futon on the blue. Whoa. But that's just lazy Stanley Dicurus. Oh, I'm Japanese. You say I'm not an owl with the bees. Oh, I'm Japanese. Shogun, Pokemon, Hirachima, Konnichiwa. Red circle on a big white cloth. Godzilla fights the giant moth. Just do a dance that floats like in their underpants. I love the gleaming cities, cartoon kitties with big titties. Why won't you accept I'm from Tokyo? It makes me pretty angry.
That was Gary Lestrange, and I'm Japanese. We had him on in July, and then he went on to a huge success at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. The two are, of course, not related. Those two facts are not related. Other guests we've got coming up next week on the 21st, Nick Salomon from the Bevis Frond. We'll be talking about his own work and bringing in some of the gems from his collection of 60s freak beat singles, which dominates his entire house and life. And so it'll be great to hear some of them. On the 5th of October, that's next time in, John Dowie will be back. He was the there's the door ringing again. We'll have to leave that for 2 minutes, whoever it is. John Dowie's in on the 5th of October. He was the first man to record on Factory Records, and he's a comedy poet, but he's just got a kid's book out called Dog Man. And on the 26th of October, I'm in with Mark Brend, who was in the cult 80s band Palace of Light and recently wrote a book called American Troubadours about the folk rock scene of Greenwich Village in America in the 60s. And before that, we heard the Country Teasers, the first track from their new album, Some Weapons Revealed at Last, and that was called Success. And thanks, Ben, for coming in. I'm sorry that it was...
I've really enjoyed it, thank you.
And Tony Brennan, Morris Dancer and Spy. Early on I was
talking... Not a Spy.
Not a Spy, okay. I was talking to Peter Paphides, who's programming stuff at Cecil Sharp House, about... how he felt he could overcome a kind of stigma that's associated with
I'll just
get that. With the real ale stigma. Is that where now for Morris, for English Morris?
I can see English Morris continuing in much the same way as it has done for many years before, but entertaining hundreds of people.
It's not something that needs a youth recruitment drive though.
It certainly is. I think I did Blunt Dance last year, and there was a guy who'd set up a nice side 18 years and under. And it was really good to bring some young people through.
How would someone, if someone wanted to do English traditional dance, Who would they get in contact
with? I think
Cecil
Sharp House is a good first port of call. That's where the English Folk Dance and Song Society is based.
That's amazing. You're the second of three guests who's had to give out the address of Cecil Sharp House as a place
but
to call.
He knew the address. It's in Camden, isn't it?
It's in Camden, yeah.
And
by the park.
It could have been playing, couldn't it?
I know, It's Cecil Sharp House promotional day here.
Quite right, too.
But thanks for coming in and talking about
Great
that.
Great pleasure, thank you.
I hugely appreciate it.
Thank you.
And thanks everyone for listening to this. I've been Stuart Lee on Resonance 104.4 FM on one-way single-parent family favourites here on Sunday lunchtime. I'll be back next week, like I say, at 12. We're going to go out with something a bit sad. Johnny Cash died this week. We know that because in their typical manipulative, dishonest way, on Thursday night, you could have walked through town here in London and seen Evening Standard billboards saying, famous man dies, which then means you have to buy the newspaper. It's unpleasant. But anyway, here's a track he did. It's a version of Nick Cave's The Mercy Seat.
It all began when they took me from my home and put me on death row. A crime for which I'm totally innocent, you know. I began to warm and chill to objects and their fields. A ragged cup, a twisted mop, the face of Jesus in my soup. Those sinister dinner deals, the meal trolley's wicked wheels, a hook bone rising from my food, and all things either good or ungood. And the mercy seat is waiting, and I think my head is burning, and in a way I'm yearning to be done with all this weighing of the truth. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and anyway I told the truth. And I'm not afraid to die. I hear stories from the chamber. Christ was born into a manger, and like some ragged stranger, he died upon the cross. Might I say it seems so fitting in its way, he was a carpenter by trade, or at least that's what I'm told. My kill hand's tattooed evil across its brother's fist. That filthy five, they did nothing to challenge or resist. In heaven his throne is made of gold. The ark of his testament is stowed. A throne from which I'm told all history does unfold. It's made of wood and wire, and my body is on fire. And God is never far away. Into the mercy seat I climb. My head is shaved, my head is wired, and like a moth that tries to enter the bright eye, I go shuffling out of life just to hide in death a while. And anyway, I never lie. And the mercy seat is waiting, and I think my head is burning, and in a way I'm yearning to be done with all this weighing of the truth. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and anyway I told the truth, and I'm not afraid to die. And the mercy seat is burning, and I think my head is glowing, and in a way I'm hoping to be done with all this twisting of the truth. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and anyway there was no proof, and I'm not afraid to die. And the mercy seat is glowing, and I think my head is smoking, and in a way I'm hoping to be done with all these looks of disbelief. A life for a life and a truth for a truth, and I've got nothing left to lose, and I'm not afraid to die. And the mercy seat is smoking, and I think my head is melting, and in a way that's helping to be done with all this twisting of the truth. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, and anyway I told the truth, but I'm afraid I told a lie.